Do herbal and diet supplements have an effect on weight loss? It's a $57 billion industry, so surely there must be some science involved. Well, there is science involved, but is it making people thinner? 15% of Americans have taken weight loss supplements, so that would be 30 million adults there. I don't know what the figure would be in New Zealand. Consumer New Zealand looked at green tea extracts, bitter orange, chromium, Garcinia Cambogia, conjugated linoleic acid. Didn't find much evidence of weight loss. And in other products, for example, hop extracts, there were risks attached to benefits. It's an Australian study, this new one, and joining us is its lead author, Erica Bessel, from the University of Sydney's Faculty of Medicine and Health. Hello.
Hello, how are you going?
Very well, thank you. You presented your find to the European Congress on Obesity.
Yes, that's correct. We have two scientific papers coming from this project, both of which were presented at the European Congress on Obesity last week.
With an industry worth so much money, Erica, it is strange there haven't been many attempts to review the available scientific literature on herbal and dietary supplements.
Other reviews in this area often focus on only one supplement or, say, on a handful of the most popular supplements. These reviews often include evidence from studies that aren't the gold standard design as well, which in this case is randomised placebo-controlled trials. So what we wanted to do was search the scientific literature to find studies which specifically used this gold standard design to investigate all herbal or dietary supplements for weight loss. So we can report the combined evidence on the best quality studies, and this sort of review hasn't been done for a while.
How many supplements did you look at, do you know?
We looked at lots. All up, there was more than 60 different supplements investigated in 121 different studies.
Okay. Most supplements you might buy from a pharmacy or even the supermarket are safe, do we know?
Yes, most supplements we can buy in store are safe for short-term use, though there is often limited or no research on their long-term safety. There is also a risk of interactions between some supplements and pharmaceutical medications, so people should let their GP or their pharmacist know what supplements they're taking as well.
Which I presume they often don't. How about the supplements you can order online in terms of safety, Erica?
Each country will have regulations in place for those sold locally, but supplements sold online are not as easy to regulate as they can be imported from overseas. One example is ephedra. Ephedra is banned in many countries as it can have quite serious side effects. That said, I'm sure that it could still be found to buy online, unfortunately.
What does ephedra do?
Well, it's marketed as a weight loss supplement, but it has a risk of side effects that include, you know, increased blood pressure, heart palpitations, and there have even been some cases of death from ephedra use as well.
Okay. Can you explain the difference between herbal and dietary supplements for us, just so we're clear?
This was a distinction that we made for our reviews, though there are other definitions used by governing bodies in different countries, but we defined herbal supplements as those containing an extract of a whole plant, for example, green tea or Garcinia Cambogia. Dietary supplements, on the other hand, we defined as those containing isolated compounds or isolated ingredients, for example, specific fibers or fats or antioxidants, which had been extracted and isolated from their natural source.
Okay. That's clear. Examples of popular herbal supplements would be what, aside from green tea?
There are plenty of different sorts out there. To name a few of the others that we looked at, there was also Garcinia Cambogia, white kidney bean, African mango, veld grape, licorice root, ginger are all popular ones.
Did any herbal supplements have efficacy?
In our reviews, if a supplement had been investigated in four or more studies, we conducted something called a meta-analysis, which essentially calculates a weighted average for the effect of the supplement on weight loss. So we did a meta-analysis for three herbal supplements, being green tea, Garcinia Cambogia, and white kidney bean. And of these three, only white kidney bean resulted in weight loss overall. However, the amount of weight loss was not meaningful from a clinical perspective. There was also a handful of other herbal supplements which had been investigated in only one or two studies, which had promising results, but more research is needed before we can give a proper conclusion on these ones.
Why do we think white kidney beans might work to some limited extent?
White kidney bean contains compounds which can block the enzymes digesting starch in our gut. This was originally found in test tube experiments conducted in a lab. The theory then went from there that if you take white kidney bean supplements to stop the digestion of starch in your gut, you won't be able to absorb the calories from that starch, and less calories will hopefully mean weight loss.
Okay, but not much, as it turned out.
Yeah, these theories don't always translate into practice, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the point, isn't it? Interesting theories and claims. With the dietary supplements, can you tell us the ones that didn't work or didn't really work much and the ones you found that might?
Yeah, so we found that fibers, chitosan and glucomannan, and a fat called conjugated linoleic acid all resulted in weight loss. But again, like white kidney bean, the amount of weight loss was not meaningful from a clinical perspective. In terms of the ones that we found that might work, some dietary supplements did show promising results in one or two studies only. These include things like beta-glucan, some complex sugars called fructans, modified cellulose, and mano-oligosaccharides, as well as a blood orange juice extract. These are all promising ones.
Gee, we're strangers in a strange land with a lot of these supplements, aren't we? Because we know about green tea and ginger, and we've heard about a few of them, but a lot of them people would never have heard of until they read the blurb on them and the marketing of them.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They might just be marketed as like a fat blaster supplement or something like that, and you might not necessarily know the specific ingredients that are in them.
Even with supplements that might have efficacy, the jury is still out on what else they may do to us internally.
Yeah, that's right. Efficacy is one thing, but we also need to be conducting good quality research to assess the safety of these supplements as well. Not only in the short term, but also, their safety with long-term use.
Erica Bessel is with us from the University of Sydney's Faculty of Medicine and Health. What about the trials the supplements companies run themselves and trumpet in their advertising sometimes? How reliable are they?
This is where reporting becomes important, at least in the scientific community. There will always be a risk of bias in studies run by the supplement companies due to the conflict of interest there. So we need researchers to thoroughly report on their trial design in their scientific papers so that we, as the readers, can properly assess that risk of bias. This is something that we actually found was often inadequate in the papers that we reviewed.
A lot of people wouldn't want to go to the trouble, would they, of educating themselves? And we're all busy. It's not just a matter of laziness. So that's part of the issue here.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, we believe the marketing, the clever marketing from these companies, without investigating it ourselves.
It would seem, am I right, that the ones that do work to some extent bulk you up or give you a feeling of fullness? Is that how it happens?
Some of them work that way. There's a variety of different ways that the supplements, may work or are speculated to work. Yes, some will make you feel full so that you eat less. Some may reduce the absorption of fats or carbohydrates in your gut. Others may alter energy metabolism or fat synthesis. The issue is that our bodies are, complex machines, and our weight is influenced by a whole range of factors outside of, just how much we eat or how much we're absorbing.
So we're very much still groping in the dark, aren't we, in terms of reducing weight with supplements?
Yeah, I suppose so. We develop these theories in preliminary trials, and then they go on to the more rigorous trial designs to see if they have any effect in real life. But unfortunately, a lot of them don't end up translating in that way.
Here's the long question. So nothing much works or doesn't work splendidly. And yet I can go online on a site like healthline.com, for instance, and be told that the spice fenugreek has been shown to reduce appetite and food intake to support weight loss, that cayenne pepper containing capsaicin has been shown to increase metabolism and reduce hunger and calorie intake. Ginger may decrease fat absorption and appetite. Oregano may alter fat synthesis in the body. Ginseng may delay fat absorption. The curcumin and turmeric. Cinnamon can decrease blood sugar. Cumin has been shown to decrease body weight, and so on. It's a long list that I can go online and read quite encouraging remarks about, and yet in practice, it's not like that.
It is a very long list. I suppose there's two takeaways here. The first is the wording that's used to market these products. Companies will use phrases such as supports or aids or may assist with. This sort of vague wording is how the companies can get around the regulations that prevent them from making direct claims about the benefits of their product. So watch out for that vague wording. The second takeaway is that the research that backs up these claims is often not from studies using that gold standard design, and the results may even be interpreted in such a way that favours the supplement. Sometimes the evidence isn't even from human studies. For example, with the white kidney bean example, the ingredients of the supplement may have been found to interact with certain enzymes in a test tube. And from here, a theory is developed that the supplement may decrease fat absorption or may support weight loss or whatever the claim may be.
And in fairness, that list I just went through, all those claims are accompanied by may and can and yeah. So they're not stating definite facts.
Yeah, they often are.
Can we talk about the downsides? Higher doses of chromium can cause kidney damage. CLA, which some people will know about, may raise insulin resistance and predispose you to type 2 diabetes long term. Bitter orange can raise your blood pressure. And again, these are all coulds and mays, I suppose, but it's something to be concerned about, isn't it?
These types of side effects may exist, particularly when the supplement is taken at high doses or if it's taken for a long time, for example. And yeah, again, it is all mays and ifs, so we don't definitively know the answer. In our reviews, we mainly looked at efficacy, but we did also look at safety based on what was reported in the studies that we reviewed. Most of the reported side effects that we saw were gastrointestinal side effects, such as bloating or nausea or constipation. These types of side effects are often not very severe, and they subside over time as our body adjusts as well.
One aspect of this industry, which you've alluded to, seems to be small studies that look promising, with later and larger examinations contradicting or watering down earlier claims, like I think with resveratrol from memory. So why do the early encouraging studies look so promising compared with later conclusions?
So sometimes the trial results in the earlier studies may be interpreted in such a way that favours the supplement, and this interpretation can then be used to support their claims of efficacy. And as an independent reader of the publication, I might think that those claims are overstated based on the actual results. But this isn't always the case. The early results may indeed be promising, and it is just part of the scientific process that results need to be validated and they need to be confirmed with further studies. And this is why we conduct those larger studies with more rigorous design and then conduct reviews of these studies as we have done. This is what needs to happen before the findings can become accepted wisdom.
Given that the weight loss theories look good, as you've said, and in practice there is some kind of weight loss action happening sometimes, there is still possibly a magic pill out there that will safely increase metabolism, delay fat absorption and so on in an emphatic way, but we just haven't found it yet?
There may be, and I'm sure we'll keep looking to try and find that magic pill. In the meantime, the best thing to recommend is, you know, good old-fashioned healthy eating and exercise.
Just finally, out of interest, do you get any correspondence from the supplements industry? Because they'd take a keen interest in what you've been finding in your research?
To be honest, no, I haven't had any direct correspondence with anyone in the supplements industry. Yeah, mainly just from people like yourself, from different news outlets or other researchers, but no, not the supplements industry.
Erica, thank you so much for your time talking to us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jim.
Erica Bessel from the University of Sydney's Faculty of Medicine.